How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord? Forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me?
Reporter Gina Smalley, a staff writer for the Warsaw Times Union in 1985, interviewed Ron Williams about his program at Hepzibah House. Williams told her that the girls are, quote, trained in household maintenance and to become housewives. He said he has had girls who have seen a washing machine and said, "What's that?" Some of the duties the girls have, according to Williams, are carrying firewood, household chores, hanging clothes on a line, washing a vehicle.
We moved rocks, we raked, we did landscaping, we painted houses, there was just endless labor. He was building that whole compound. We planted the tree line on our hands and knees in the sleet. I remember that. And I remember if anything was broken, we were to be paddled. So we handled these little trees like they were glass, being screamed at the whole time, you know. It was really, really hard to see that tree line. And remember that day where we were out there kneeling in the cold, digging that up so furiously, and now it hides him from the world.
I didn't really attend school that often because I was on their outside crew, so I'd pretty much go there in the morning and be yanked out, right away. There were times that I was told in the morning, don't put your uniform on, put your work clothes on. I'd still go to school for a few minutes and do our pledges or whatever, and then I'd be out working.
I was a stick when I went there to begin with. And so I could have weighed maybe 130 tops. And at one point I was 112. And I'm 5'9".
I stopped menstruating the entire time that I was there.
I was 90. I went from 175 pounds to 97 pounds in 8 months.
I was one of the work crew. There were three of us that were pretty much consistently called out of school after chapel every day. They'd take attendance and he'd come get us and we'd go do work with Mr. Kagan. The girls who weren't as trusted or weren't as strong would stay and do schoolwork. My typical day was anything from pitching manure, often at what looked like commercial farms, chicken, horse, cow, bringing it back to the property, spreading it on the garden. We'd do that for 8 hours straight. We dug ditches. We built the fence around the back. We did tile work, wallpapering, sanding down cupboards, refinishing them. We did the kind of detail work nobody would even think of doing with manual labor anymore.
Stripping and staining tons of wooden furniture, sanding a bus and repainting it, building a pole barn, lifting 5-gallon pails filled with honey. Literally, I was 100 pounds and lifting overhead 5-gallon pails to lift up into a loft to hand to somebody else. They had all these just hordes and hordes of food and things that were donated that were just stored in different places. We didn't really get to use them. We didn't. But they were just stored in blessing rooms and attics and lofts and whatever. So we had to keep all that clean. We did all this gardening for hours and hours and hours on end. The gardening was never ending.
Williams called it girl power with a big chuckle. Amazing what you can do with girl power, he would say. Never paid for the work.
We had to strip and re-wallpaper a room. There was some painting. There was all kinds of cleaning. All kinds of stuff we had to do around that house, yard work. And there were times literally, this was not like an everyday, but there were times when I did not get back. A few of us, 2-3 in the morning.
I was always hungry. I was always, always hungry. In the garden one time, I was pulling weeds, and one of the weeds that I pulled up had a little tiny potato on the bottom of it. And I glanced, and I dusted it off, and I put it in my mouth, and I put my head down so no one would see me chewing that tiny little dirty raw potato. But I was so hungry.
They had something with the sheriff's office where they would get the roadkill. And we didn't get to eat it, but they would wake us up in the middle of the night to come down to the kitchen and help, process the venison.
In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, Paul commands fathers not to treat their children unjustly or to bring them to despair. That is, not to provoke them to wrath, but to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And Paul's word choice here would have been both startling and very clear to his first readers. For Paul was actually laying down one method of raising children over another, a way of raising children that up until then had been considered out of the reach of ordinary people. For Paul tells fathers to use a type of education called paideia, which was the Athenian method of raising noble-born sons to their true value or true worth. It was the way noble sons were educated because they would one day assume positions of rulership in Athens. Paideia, which Paul commands for all children and not just sons, was not education in a skill or trade. That type of education, called banousos, is not forbidden in the Bible, but it is not what Paul is talking about here. Paideia, truly, is an education of the mind, first and foremost. It was characterized in Paul's culture by teachers conversing with their students. The Lord Jesus Christ, whether or not his followers knew this, used this type of education. He sat down and ate and drank with his followers and loved their fellowship with him, and yet he was also their teacher. He liked nothing better than to be with his students. The Greek writers often teased each other about their doting pride in their students, but they actually found this type of education admirable. Now, paideia did include physical rigor. Athenian heroes were famous for their strategic brilliance and their physical prowess, and nobles educated under the system of paideia were the sorts of young men who would swim a river in full armor or engage in boxing with bare knuckles. But their attitude was that physical discipline and hardship were equipping them for great acts of heroism to preserve the glory of their kingdom. In Hebrews chapter 12, the writer uses the word paideia several times, and the King James Version translates it as chastening, which is regrettable, particularly where the text says, "If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as sons, for what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not?" Some of the intended meaning is lost here. The writer is not talking about punishment as we or as Ron Williams thinks of punishment to break the will of a child, but rather a process by which a Christian learns, by pain and hardship, to not fear pain because his or her calling is so worthy and so valuable that the pain is an acceptable part of getting there. But paideia, this type of education called nurturing in the King James Bible, is a loving, doting, generous system of education that appeals to the student as a hero in training, a person being equipped to inherit and rule a kingdom. And Paul commands this type of education for all Christian children. As Mary sat at the feet of Christ in the place of the favorite student, even so all Christian women are given a right by God through Christ to be trained as the noble children of God, to be trained to have a great Christian mind.
Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest mine enemy say, I have prevailed against him, and those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But I have trusted in thy mercy.
The students at Hepzibah House have to eat what is put in front of them. They cannot refuse anything. Usually they cannot ask for seconds. Often, if a student throws up what she's eaten, she's made to eat her own vomit. Throwing up is a sign of rebellion at Hepzibah House, not illness.
Breakfast at Hepzibah House on Tuesdays and Thursdays was a bowl with bran, raw bran. It looked like warm water with a little bit of honey. We would eat the whole thing and save that last bite that was sweet because it was so awful. The worst part about the bran for breakfast was that it really revved up your system, and we still had to wait till 10 o'clock for our first bathroom break. And we would have 20 girls crying every Tuesday and Thursday waiting to go to the bathroom. And when that 10 o'clock break came, they would line us up outside the one single stall with the door open because staff had to be there watching. Staff would laugh if we were starting to worry that the break time was over and we weren't going to make it. They thought that was great fun.
You were either on regular portions because you were what they considered normal weight, you were on half portions because you were what they considered overweight, and you were pulling serious hard day's labor on half rations. I'm talking like a cup of food three times a day, and you're doing hard labor. It's just not, that shouldn't have been. Or you were a skinny chick and they were forcing you to eat twice. So they were making you have an eating disorder just to be there.
I went to Hepzibah House and I just started dropping weight like crazy. I was so hungry every minute, even though I ate everything I was told to eat. It just wasn't enough. We worked way too hard. I dropped 40 pounds in 4 months. And I was so thin that my bones just stuck out. It hurt. My joints hurt. I started growing hair on my back, but all that my other body hair fell out.
If you did not finish your meal, regardless of how much was left within the 30 minutes, you would get only that portion for the next meal. So let's say you had 3 bites left. If your 30 minutes were up and you had not finished your meal, that meal will go into the fridge and that would be all that you would get for the next meal.
I stopped menstruating the week I got there, and all the girls said that's exactly what happened, and that's what I saw. The girls just did not have periods at Hepzibah House. Could be the extreme weight loss. Most girls lost that much weight.
I was 140 pounds when I came to Hepzibah House, so they felt that I was too fat, and I was put on small portions. It was pretty small, very small amounts of food. I was always hungry. I lost a lot of weight while I was there, probably about 40 pounds.
We weren't fed enough, and we were worked so hard all the time. I just kept losing more and more weight.
If you did not have a bowel movement, you would be required to take a psyllium shake, which is dry psyllium mixed with water. It ends up thickening as you're trying to swallow it. I never had to take it. I saw and witnessed several girls having to take it. I also saw and witnessed several girls gagging and throwing up on it and having to retake it, the stuff, the portion that they had thrown up. They were being told that they were being overdramatic and rebellious, and that as their punishment, they would be required to drink it.
One time we had cow tongue. It was like chewing boot leather, and we had to eat it. And you needed to eat it because your body was just starving. And so you would just chew, and you would chew, and you would chew, and you would drink water and try to just soften enough so you could swallow it.
Whatever were the foods that were most donated is what we ate. When I was there, we just didn't eat meat. That was like the thing. We had meat one day a week, and it was a 3-inch piece of turkey kielbasa. But that was the only meat that we got. Every day for breakfast was 2 pieces of bread, a bowl of some sort of cereal, water, and tea. Tons of vitamins. Lunch was 4 pieces of bread, a couple tomatoes, or a bowl of soup, and water and tea. Dinner was a casserole, you know, macaroni and cheese or a grit casserole, baked beans, radish sprouts with everything.
The soup at Hepzibah House was simply a bucket full of odds and ends that had been donated, all thrown together and then heated up for the girls to eat.
Every week we would get a shipment. I know it was donated to us. And any cans that were dented or unmarked would go downstairs into the kitchen. We would bleach the top of the cans, open the cans, and proceed to put whatever was in the can, as long as it were not fruit, into a bucket. It was, I believe, a 2-gallon bucket. You would dump every single can, regardless of what it was, into that bucket. One day, and we were working on putting together our lunch meal, and I was opening cans, and I found a can of Alpo. And this happened a few more times than just this particular time. I opened 2 more cans, and I remember a staff member looking over and saying, "That can go in. It's perfectly fine." I was very disgusted, and I remember I had a very hard time eating that meal.
So Ron Williams received payment from parents for taking their children. He also received donations of food as a charitable organization. Williams also went and continues to go to churches to raise support for Hepzibah House. He maintains a radio program to this day that solicits donations. Williams did not and does not pay his staff. They have to raise their own support like missionaries. He also has used and continues to use the girls at Hepzibah House as his unpaid labor force, including, at times, as labor at other places for which he was paid. In the next episode, the policy of humiliation at Hepzibah House. The Lambs of Hepzibah House is produced by Jerry Massey.